evening, everyone. This is Luke Cavalli, and you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. We try to give you a Christian perspective on the news and bring you some interesting points that maybe the mainstream media just didn't get around to talking about or didn't want to talk about. Well, the first one is going to be a lighthearted one. Just a couple days ago, we had Groundhog Day. Here's a little article from Fox News. I'll just give you a few of the highlights. Groundhog Day. Punxsutawney Phil makes 140th weather prediction. And the subtitle says, Punxsutawney Phil made his annual weather prediction while AccuWeather warns of continued cold temperatures and snow in the eastern U.S. And I'll just interrupt for a minute. And many of you may have noticed we had to do a repeat last week because we got snowed in. I tried to prepare a lesson, but I couldn't get to the library. My laptop wasn't working quite right due to, I guess, power outages. And we got a good socking a week ago Sunday. It wasn't so much the snowfall itself. I don't think we got much more than 5 or 6 inches here in the eastern shore of Maryland. But we got, toward evening, it all turned into freezing rain and sleet. And that has made a coating on top of the snow that even now, a week and 2 days later, as I record this, is hard stuff. I was just up at the local church trying to break up some of this so we could get some parking spaces available at the church. But, man, it's tough, even with steel shovels. Very tough to break up. And I walked up to my shed, and several steps, I didn't even sink into the snow. That coating of ice is still strong enough that it held me up. A few steps I did sink down in, but several steps, it looks like a giant walk because you see these steps with about 8 feet between them, give or take a little. Anyway, back to Punxsutawney Phil. Let's see what he had to say. This was by Stephen Sarace, Fox News, February 2nd, 2026. Pennsylvania's, quote, official state meteorologist, unquote, Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow Monday morning, predicting 6 more weeks of winter. Thousands of people gathered for the 140th celebration of Groundhog Day on Gobbler's Knob in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, to see the famous groundhog emerge from his tree stump. And I'll just interject that my wife Elizabeth, many of you heard her when she was still living and active on this program. Sad to say, it's coming up on the first anniversary of her death in just a couple weeks. But I believe that Elizabeth grew up probably no more than 50 miles from Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. So she was always interested in this. She didn't particularly put any stock in it, but she liked to see the coverage on TV. But getting back to the article, meanwhile, AccuWeather's chief long-range weather expert, meteorologist Paul Pastelak, said the coming week will remain cold with below-average temperatures in the eastern United States. And he said, quote, we've still got some more snow and ice to contend with in the Middle Atlantic, Ohio River Valley, and northeastern U.S. Here's some good pictures if you want to go to Fox News, February 2nd. There's one that shows the Groundhog Club handler, A.J. DeRume. I hope I'm saying his name right, D-E-R-E-U-M-E. He's holding Punxsutawney Phil, the weather prognosticating groundhog, during the 137th celebration of Groundhog Day on Gobbler's Knob in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, February 2nd. And the picture shows it 2023. That's why it says the 137th. The picture was taken 3 years ago. And the AccuWeather gentleman, Paul Pastelak, said the farther out you get, the accuracy is not specifically on point all the time. But we can get trends. I'm just going to skip down now. Most of this is just local color. Oh, let me see now. It It says the government agency last year, which I believe is the National Centers for Environmental Information, they remain skeptical of the animal's prediction abilities. As the government agency last year compared Phil's record with U.S. national temperatures over the prior decade and concluded he was right only 40% of the time. Well, I think that's interesting. Having done a lot with statistics, 40% doesn't sound so bad. I have analyzed that in a statistical way, but that's a fun thing. Gives people a little something to celebrate in the middle of the coldest part of the winter. And we have had the cold part of the winter here. The last, I think yesterday, which was Monday, February 2nd, Groundhog Day, as I record this, was, I don't know how many days in a row, with sub-freezing temperatures, where it didn't get above freezing at all. And that's why the snow is still with us, and the ice. And some of the roads still have considerable ice on them, the side roads. All right, again, that was from Fox News on Groundhog Day, February 2nd, 2026. Now, where's your money going? Well, we've heard a lot about Minnesota. Let's take a look at some of the rest. Here's something from the Gateway Pundit, also February 2nd, 2026. And the headline reads, Eyes on California. 18% of total U.S. home health care billing is coming out of L.A. County. One doctor billed the government for $120 million in just 1 year. Now, this is actually a video if you wanted to go to the website for Gateway Pundit, February 2nd. The article is by Jim Hoff, so I'm just giving you some of the highlights here. The Trump administration and Dr. Mehmet Oz, the administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, have turned their attention to Los Angeles County and the massive amount of alleged medical fraud that is being reported from California. According to Fox News, one L.A. doctor billed the government $120 million, claiming to oversee 1,900 patients in 1 year. 18%, now get this, 18% of the entire country's home health care billing is coming out of Los Angeles County, almost 20%. Now, I'm going to interrupt for a minute. I was wondering how many counties there are in the United States. Well, it says if you include certain cities that act as counties, Baltimore being one of them, there are 3,143 counties and county equivalent entities in the United States, of which Los Angeles County is just one. One out of 3,143. And yet it has almost one-fifth of the health care billing from Los Angeles County. Getting back to the article, something is rotten in L.A. The Trump administration is investigating. And Los Angeles has almost, oh, this is it. You got to listen to this one. This is a big one. Los Angeles has almost 2,000 registered hospice agencies. That is more than 36 states combined and 30 times more than the whole state of Florida and New York. Dr. Oz explained how easy it would be to open a hospice in L.A. You don't even have to live there. These are the words of Dr. Oz. How is that possible? And take a look at this map, a cluster of 287 hospice providers in a two-mile radius. Some in strip malls, unmarked buildings, even a wrecking yard and vacant lot. All of it is just paperwork. And I'll interject, I think he means that it's just on paper. There's no reality to these hospices. He says, I could fill that out in Kazakhstan if I want, and get a hospice license waiting for me. And my home state of Maryland has only 23 counties and Baltimore City. But I'll tell you something. If you compare that to Los Angeles County, man, one-fifth just about of all the health care billing is coming out of that one county. I realize L.A. is a big city, and the county is no doubt a high population, but it doesn't compare to the whole country. Well, that's where the money's going, some of it anyway. Not all going out to the frauds in Minnesota. All right, if you're listening to this, you know that we are broadcasting on shortwave Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. on a frequency of 4.840 megahertz, and also WWCR.com. You can go to their website. I think it's transmitter 3, but when you check it ahead of time and you can see their schedule on the different transmitters and find the one for the Divided Kingdom. But anyway, it's at 8 p.m., and if you choose to use shortwave, 8 p.m. Thursday evening, 4.840, repeats on Saturday morning, 8 a.m., 7.490. I always have to stop and think about that. And if you want to write to us, we welcome that. You can write to us at the Divided Kingdom, or you can write to me, Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, at Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I'll get that address later if you didn't have a pen and paper handy. Well, what else do we have? Here's something from the LifeSite News. Down through the last several years, they've been very good at keeping track of the so-called vaccine for COVID, or vaccines, actually it's more than one. Well, the headline reads, Canada admits COVID shots have harmed thousands of people who await compensation. The sub-headline says the Canadian government will take direct control of the vaccine injury support program. Remember, this is in Canada. In April, from a company that has only paid out $18 million to jab-insured Canadians. This is by Anthony Murdoch, once again, LifeSite News, Friday, January 30th, 2026. Dateline, Ottawa. Canada's public health agency more or less admitted that the COVID shots have caused harm to no less than 10,000 people, and that it must take direct control of a vaccine. Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. As mentioned in a briefing note from December, the consultants the government hired to oversee the Vaccine Injury Support Program, shorthand VISP, this program, were the cause of, quote, frustration and hardship, unquote, in helping jab-injured people get compensation. As such, starting April 1st, the government will take direct control over the program from Oxaro, O-X-A-R-O, Incorporated, which they has only paid out $18 million to jab-insured Canadians. The agency admitted, quote, we have heard the process has been slow and difficult for many, unquote. And this is Lou speaking. I think that's quite an understatement. And it added, the government of Canada is committed to providing timely financial support for people in Canada who experience a serious and permanent injury as a result of receiving a Health Canada-approved vaccine, unquote. Yet Canada's government continues to purchase the COVID shots, although its own data shows that most Canadians are flat-out refusing a COVID booster injection. The news also comes as the government has had to increase spending on VISP, and that's the vaccine. Let me look that back up again. Vaccine Injury Support Program. And they say that the news also comes as the government has had to increase spending on this, as reported by LifeSite News. This was launched in December 2020 after the Canadian government gave vaccine makers a shield from liability regarding COVID-19 jab-related injuries. However, mismanagement within the program has led to many injured Canadians still waiting to receive compensation while government contractors grow richer. The public health agency has already admitted that it kept incomplete data regarding, quote, adverse events, unquote, from the mRNA shots. To Lou again, notice the words they use to try to disguise things. adverse events. They don't want to say injuries or deaths. So they use this vague phrase, adverse events, which just means bad events. Trying to disguise the responsibility, I guess. Okay, back to the article. I'm going to skip down just a little bit. Over 10,000 serious cases have been reported, including 442 deaths outright. Also spontaneous abortions and hundreds of heart attacks, strokes, organ damage, and facial paralysis. Of the $50.6 million that Oxaro Incorporated has received, $33.7 million has been spent on administrative costs. That's roughly speaking, and I'm doing this in my head, roughly 67% of the money. Well, more than half was spent on administrative costs, compared with only $18.1 million going to vaccine-injured Canadians. Yes, now let me just look down a little bit. Despite the damage caused by the COVID shots in Canada and worldwide, former and current Canadian politicians have failed to take ownership of the fact that thousands were injured under their watch. For example, former Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau appeared to laugh at the suggestion that a COVID shot had killed the mother of a media outlet's cameraman who was asking him questions on the streets of Davos during the World Economic Forum gathering earlier this month. Trudeau had disparaged Canadians who chose not to get the COVID shots, saying those opposing his measures were a, quote, small fringe minority, unquote, who hold, quote, unacceptable views and do not represent the views of Canadians who have been there for each other, unquote. Well, that's typical political talk. This is loose speak now, not the article. Well, let's see. That gives you the flavor of this article. Don't forget it. The book that Elizabeth and I wrote, mostly Elizabeth did the writing, but I helped out some, put some articles and also editing. We got just a few left, maybe four or five. And I would say that one listener, I think it might have been from Colorado, had requested two books, and at the time I had enough. However, it came back with the wrong address. And as I recall, there were two addresses, one inside, handwritten, and one outside. And apparently I used the wrong one. So I've kept those two books, and I'll keep those in reserve. And if the person who ordered those will write to me, I'll see to it that they go to the proper address. Just make sure that the address is clear and easily visible. Another one from Pennsylvania just came a couple days ago, I think, and I was able to piece together. Unfortunately, the post office put that cancellation stamp right smack on top of the zip code, but I looked it up, and I think the city it's in has only one zip code. So I'll get that one out probably tomorrow into the mail. But if you'd like a copy of that book, it'll be first come, first served, because at the moment, I simply can't afford to have another printing. It's called COVID and Coming Chaos. Many of you have already gotten copies of it, and it's free. If you can just give me $5 for the postage, that would be a great help. Just write to me, Blue Camerley, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. All you have to do is just make sure your address is clear and just say, please send me your book. That's all you have to write. And I'll get it right out to you as soon as possible. And a couple comments on the weather. Our little street where I live is good if the sun was shining on it. But where the trees had shaded it, it's still bumpy and icy. Not too slick, but it kind of shakes your car pretty good. The main roads, fortunately, are fine. But I guess they didn't treat our little side street. We don't rate. And probably the county's running out of money, too. Well, now, that, by the way, again, was an article on Canada from LifeSite News. That's a Canadian company, by the way, LifeSite News. LifeSiteNews.com. And that appeared on Friday, January 30th, if you'd like to check that out. And I had to skip a few things in the interest of time, but gave you the main points. Now, let's go to WorldNet Daily, another medical-related topic. We have heard about all this surgery when Elizabeth was still alive. This really got to her. All this surgery being performed on young people, destroying their ability to have any kind of a romantic life. And you can't believe the irresponsibility of the doctors, psychologists, who were involved in this scam. And I'm going to call it a scam. So here's an article from WorldNet Daily by Bob Unruh. He's one of their regular writers. Dated February 2nd, 2026. And the title says, Doctor Performs Trans Surgery on 16-Year-Old Girl Now Forced to Pay Huge Price. A stunning precedent has been set for those medical malpractice cases that are erupting against doctors who did transgender surgery on minors, sometimes removing healthy breasts or other healthy body parts in their pursuit of an ideology that defies science. A $2 million jury award. Constitutional expert Jonathan Turley, and I'll interrupt just to say that many of you have heard Jonathan or seen him on Fox News. He's a frequent advisor on legal matters, and I think he is a professor at one of the Washington, D.C. noted colleges. It may be Georgetown, maybe George Washington U. Can't remember which one. But anyway, going on now, constitutional expert Jonathan Turley, whose advice on those issues many times has guided Congress, said it is thought to be the, quote, first successful lawsuit against doctors accused of malpractice over a gender transitioning surgery, unquote. He noted a New York jury, quote, awarded $2 million to Fox Varian, age 22, over the double mastectomy performed on her when she was a minor, unquote. His psychologist Kenneth Einhorn and surgeon Simon Chin, who were held responsible by the jury in Westchester County Supreme Court in White Plains, New York, for failing to follow standards of care, followed by reasonable doctors. He reported, and he, I think, is still probably Jonathan Turley. He reported Varian, this is the victim, Fox Varian, had the top surgery at the age of 16 in 2019 with the consent of her mother, who said that she felt pressured into the procedure to avoid the risk of suicide by the daughter. In an interview with the Epoch Times, Claire Deegan said Einhorn insisted on the surgery. He said, quote, this man was just so emphatic and pushing that I felt like there was no good decision, unquote. Varian's lawyers pointed out doctors, quote, overlook coexisting issues like anxiety, depression, or family dynamics before causing pain, suffering, and mental anguish of a permanent nature, unquote. The award included $1.6 million for past and future pain and suffering, and $400,000 for future medical expenses. Turley pointed out the case could be a model for other lawsuits over such surgeries performed on minors, and he noted there are dozens of such cases pending. The mother had testified to jurors that she consented to the surgery because she was told her daughter, without it, quote, would take her own life, unquote. And she further said Einhorn, that's one of the doctors involved, or actually I think a psychologist, let me look at that again, a psychologist, Kenneth Einhorn, quote, insisted her daughter was at risk of harming herself since she was a teenager with depression and gender dysphoria, unquote, the report said. President Donald Trump has begun moving to restrict medical procedures such as this type of surgery for minors with gender dysphoria. The Supreme Court recently upheld a Tennessee law banning such procedures for youth. The practice is unscientific, as being male or female is embedded in the human body down to the cellular level and doesn't change. Okay, so that was from WorldNet Daily on February the 2nd, 2026. And I'll just comment, this is Lou speaking, I'll just comment that keep in mind, this girl at the time of the surgery was only 16 years old, a minor. And now she's going to, as they say, she's forced to pay a huge price being, what's the right word? Mangled, deprived of her body for the rest of her life. She was to be 90. She'll have to be with this all that time. Well, now, over the last few weeks, we heard a lot about protests in Minnesota. In particular, it was that big protest at the Minnesota church where these hoodlums just burst into the church in the middle of the service. Well, let me read about it. It'll tell you more. The other article, by the way, was WorldNet Daily on February 2nd. This one is also WorldNet Daily, also February 2nd, but this one's by Tyler O'Neill and originated with a publication called The Daily Signal, and apparently was reprinted by WorldNet Daily, February 2nd. Federal authorities arrested two more suspects in the Minnesota church invasion, Attorney General Pam Bondi announced Monday. Bondi wrote on X, "If you riot in a place of worship, we will find you. We have made two more arrests in connection with the coordinated attack on City's Church in St. Paul, Minnesota. And those are Ian Davis Austin and Jerome D'Angelo Richardson." Those are the words of Pam Bondi, Attorney General. Both Austin and Richardson appear in the indictment that a federal grand jury handed down Thursday. Minnesota Public Radio reported that authorities arrested Austin on Friday. The group of anti-ICE agitators interrupted a Sunday service last month at City's Church, a non-denominational Christian church in St. Paul, Minnesota. According to the indictment, Austin and Richardson met with Nikema Levi Armstrong and Chantille Louisa Allen before invading the church. Former CNN host and independent journalist Don Lemon told Richardson, quote, "Don't give anything away," unquote, while speaking to his online audience as he live-streamed the invasion. Both defendants allegedly joined Levi Armstrong, Allen, and Lennon in the church, and the group engaged in, quote, "menacing and threatening behavior," unquote, toward those in the church service, such as, quote, "physically obstructing them as they attempted to exit and or move about within the church," unquote. Here's a longer quote. Austin allegedly stood with other agitators in and around the main aisles in the church to intimidate the church members and obstruct and interfere with their freedom of movement, approaching the pastor and congregants in a menacing manner. And near the end of the operation, loudly berated the pastor with questions about Christian nationalism and Christians wanting to have their faith be the law of the land, unquote. Richardson allegedly joined Lennon and independent journalist Georgia Fort as they, quote-unquote, surrounded the pastor. On Friday, Bondi announced the arrests of Lemon, Fort, Trey Hearn Cruz, and Jamal Lundy. The week before, law enforcement arrested Levi Armstrong, Allen, and William Kelly, the man who posted videos of the incident online under the handle The Woke Farmer. The grand jury indicted the nine defendants for allegedly violating the Ku Klux Klan law or act and the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act earlier this month when they entered City's Church in St. Paul amid an invasion of the service. The Klan Act criminalizes the deprivation of rights, and the Justice Department has claimed the church invaders deprived worshipers of their First Amendment right to religious exercise. The FACE Act, that is Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, protects access to houses of worship. Between 30 and 40 anti-ICE agitators interrupted the January 18th service at City's church. They shouted, "Justice for Rene Good," as they surrounded members of the congregation. Videos of the incident show the pastor and others repeatedly asking the agitators to leave, and the agitators chanting, "Who shut this down? We shut this down." According to the charging document, a member of the congregation said worshipers were terrorized. This is a quote. "They were terrorized. Our children were weeping," unquote. One woman broke her arm. Agitators blocked about 50 members of the congregation from exiting, making it, quote, "nearly impossible for parishioners to get out and leave," unquote. The document also mentions that agitators prevent the congregants from getting to their children. And one of the agitators reportedly told young children, quote, "Do you know your parents are Nazis? They're going to burn in hell," unquote. Levi Armstrong, leader of the Racial Justice Network and a former president of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP, told Democracy Now! That she does not regret helping to lead the protest. And this story originally was published by the Daily Signal publication. But I got it from Wovat Daily. Two more arrested in Minnesota church invasion, dated February 2nd, 2026. Well, as I think about, if I was in any kind of public building and a whole bunch of people came in screaming, I might be a little scared too. Might be a little intimidated. And this goes far, far, far beyond free speech. It's somewhat like that famous quote that free speech doesn't give you the right to yell fire in a crowded theater and cause a stampede killing people. In the same way, free speech, and I'm not saying this as a lawyer, but as a layman, free speech doesn't include the right to intimidate people, to assault them. And as I understand it, assault doesn't mean you have to actually touch somebody. Assault is when you scream at them. Battery is when you actually beat on them. I'm not a lawyer, but I think that's accurate. Again, that was from WorldNet Daily, and the date was February 2nd. A lot of these were Groundhog Day. Well, now what else do we have? In line with some of these protests, we have somebody from the Whiteside News. Cross-dressing Antifa General, that's a nickname, Antifa General, kicked off Venmo, Instagram, after inciting violence in Minneapolis. And the sub-headline says a self-described Antifa leader who enjoyed posting videos of himself in women's clothing says he needs to, quote, "escape political persecution," unquote, because of the backlash of his own making. And let me see now. This is by Doug Mainwaring, Whiteside News, Friday, January 30th, last Friday. A self-described cross-dressing Antifa leader has been banned by Venmo and Instagram after inciting violence following the fatal shooting of Alex Brady by Border Patrol agents last weekend. Kyle Wagner, who enjoyed posting videos of himself in women's clothing, now says he needs to escape political persecution because of the backlash of his own making. Earlier this month, as violence erupted in Minneapolis after the shooting of a protester by a law enforcement officer as she tried to run him over with her SUV, Wagner called for his comrades to, quote, "disarm, detain, identify, and potentially shoot ICE agents," unquote. He wrote, "ICE and all federal agents operating on Minnesota streets are illegitimate occupational forces." And let's see. Wagner urged on social media, as reported by the Daily Wire, quote, "show up ready to go. Not talking about peaceful protests anymore. The Second Amendment is the only thing that's going to keep you effing protected from literal effing Nazi gun. Get your effing guns and stop these effing people," he said. Funny how, this is Lou speaking now, funny how those leftists That's love to use obscenities all the time. That seems to be the leftist way of doing things. But back to the article. Internet schools soon discovered that the self-styled antivert general is really, quote, just another cross-dressing leftist acting tough behind a screen and keyboard, unquote. Now, independent news reporter Right Angle News Network explained, quote, the cross-dressing antivert general of Minneapolis, Kyle Wagner, who called for guns to be used against ICE, is now on the run from law enforcement and is begging for donations in an attempt to seek political asylum, so he is not, quote, hunted, unquote, for his beliefs. And the guy claimed on his GoFundMe page, which remains active, my name is Kyle. I am facing an immediate threat to my safety. Supporters of Trump and ICE have targeted me, doxed my personal information, and made threats against my life. Their actions have left me in constant fear, and I am now at risk of political persecution simply for standing up for what I believe in, he wrote. I am seeking urgent help to escape this danger and find safety in a place where I can continue my work without fear. He went on, the process of seeking asylum is complex and costly, and I cannot do it alone. Need your support. Unquote. A week after launching the GoFundMe appeal, only about $1,200 has been raised of the $50,000 sought by Webb. Well, I don't know if he has been arrested or not for inciting violence, but sounds like he might be. And that was in LifeSite News by Doug Mainwaring on Friday, January 30th, 2026. Well, what's happening in Maryland? I'll interject a little bit of stuff about my state of residence. I've lived here now since 1969. That's good, a long time. And it will soon be 60 years. Well, the Democrats that are in the overwhelming majority in the both houses of the state Congress in Annapolis have pushed through, I think, in the lower house, the House of Representatives, or House of Delegates, I believe is the official name, a bill to gerrymander, that is, reorganize the boundaries of the voting precincts. I guess that's the right word. Now, we have, I believe, only one state senators, or maybe it's a state representative, Andy Harris, who's a Republican. All the rest Democrats in that house of the state legislature. They are trying to reorganize the maps of Maryland as far as elections go to eliminate that one Republican. And the governor, Westmore, is all for it. I used to respect Westmore, even if I didn't like him that much. My respect for him is gone with this action. And Andy Harris has been a good representative. The Eastern Shore, you see, is largely Republican. It tends to be conservative. And, of course, the overwhelming majority of the people in the state tend to live in Baltimore City, Baltimore County, surrounding Baltimore City, and the suburbs of Washington, D.C., Prince George's County, Montgomery County, Howard County. And so even though Maryland has 23 counties, those four or five tend to dominate the elections. So Maryland, because they are Democratic majorities, Maryland as a whole tends to be a Democratic majority. Western Maryland is rural and conservative. Eastern Shore of Maryland is the same thing, mostly small towns and conservative. But they are outvoted by these big cities, metropolitan areas. So Westmore, and I think the lower house of the state legislature, has passed the bill to redistrict. Now, whether it will hold up in court is another matter, because it will deprive so many people of any real influence with their votes. So I hope it will be struck down. The Senate president, who is Democrat, was against it. I haven't got the latest, and I don't know if it's even been voted on by the state Senate yet. But I'll report back to you next week. So I am no longer respectful of Westmore. I think he's just a crude politician like all the rest. Oh, let's see now. What else do we got? Here's a little something that appeared in a Massachusetts paper, the Boston Herald, which is conservative. And this goes in well with all the Minnesota stuff. The time is now to crack down on fraud. This is by Betsy McCaughey. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. McCaughey. Why pay taxes when so much of your hard-earned money goes to fraudulent or fraudsters instead of doing good? Government bureaucrats and elected politicians, mostly Democrats, scream in outrage when any effort is made to crack down on fraud by requiring proof of where the money is actually going. They wring their hands that safeguards will delay the funds and warn of children going hungry or families in need. Meanwhile, all of us taxpayers saddled with paying for the scammers are routinely ignored. Until now, the enormity of the Minneapolis welfare ripoff is sparking a nationwide rebellion against welfare criminals and the politicians who tolerate them. The Minneapolis fraud epidemic, which has gone on since 2014, robbed taxpayers of hundreds of millions of dollars supposed to support subsidies or subsidized daycare, autism services, and feeding our future meals for poor. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz has been forced to give up his bid for re-election. But more important, California Governor Gavin Newsom and New York Governor Kathy Hochul are on the hot seat to explain the even bigger taxpayer ripoffs they have allowed to go on in their states. And more state politicians will be feeling the heat. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says a nauseating, and I want all you listeners to pay close attention to this statement. Scott Bessent says a nauseating 10% of the federal budget is spent on fraud. Some politicians benefit directly, but many more are too cowardly to call it out, fearing accusations of racism or cruelty to the poor. So far, fraud-friendly Governor Hochul and Newsom have offered only bluster and a lawsuit against the Trump administration for trying to root out the cheating. On December 30th, the Trump administration announced that in view of the Minnesota fraud scandal, all states would have to provide enrollment and attendance data, a receipt for expenditures or other photographic evidence before getting federal payments to support child care programs. The administration calls it the Defend the Spent program. All right, that is the main point here. Here's some other details. This can be found in the Boston Herald. I don't have a date for this, but I suspect if you do a little search online, you can find it under the title, The Time Is Now to Crack Down on Fraud. The author was Betsy McCaughey, McCaughey. Okay, back to some other things. Oh, we get some more fraud. Never too much fraud. You can never get to the bottom of it all. This was on Fox News. Deputy AG details massive, this is in quotes, massive underground fraud network, unquote, allegedly behind Minneapolis anti-ICE push. This is by Taylor Penley of Fox News, February 3rd, 2026. U.S. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche unpacks far-left attacks on journalists and anti-ICE attacks on the Ingram angle. Deputy Attorney General Blanche says federal investigators are uncovering a massive, this is in quotes, massive underground fraud network, unquote, in Minneapolis that he suggested helped fuel a sudden coordinated push to drive ICE out of the city. And Blanche said Monday on the Ingram Angle, quote, "We had a massive fraud going on all through Minneapolis, all through Minnesota. And suddenly it turned. It turned almost on a dime. And it became suddenly all about ICE, all about getting ICE out, and how horrible ICE was doing. We had very strong pushback when we raised our hands and said, stop. So, yes, we have multiple investigations going on," unquote. Blanche also pointed to the financial dimensions of the case, noting that investigators are making progress, and that's his word, progress, in tracing funding streams connected to the alleged network. Blanche said, "Unraveling those money trails is a priority for federal law enforcement, though he did not name specific individuals or sources." Blanche said, quote, "It's not something we're going to do overnight, but it's not just a coincidence that these massive numbers of protesters and rioters and agitators show up at the same time and are pushing back on what has been a profit center for fraudsters," unquote. Blanche's comments came amid heightened tensions between ICE and the public in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and immigration enforcement, as immigration enforcement actions have drawn protests, public backlash, and intensified scrutiny of the agency's role in the region. Okay, so that was Fox News by Taylor Pendley, February 3rd. And I heard today that they're going to give a lot of the little cameras, what do they call those little cameras, the police wear, to agents. Because actually those little cameras, they said, very often benefit the police because people can't lie about what was done to them. They show the truth. Now, we're going to, again, turn the corner here. Once again, if you want to write to me, get out a book, the few copies that are left, it'll have to become first, have to be first come, first serve. Just write to me, Lou Cavely, C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And of course, if you just like to write to me, just to say that you liked the program or disliked it or liked a certain part of it, disliked another part, by all means, feedback is always very useful, and I thank you for it. And if you can make a donation, donations have been a little on the slow side lately. It's winter, and no doubt the mail has been a little slow, too, with all the bad weather on the East Coast. But if you could help out a little bit, keep the program on the air, it would be greatly appreciated. Now, this also came from Fox News. We've heard a lot about Tyler Robinson. He was the man accused of shooting Charlie Kirk. And here's an article that appeared February 2nd by Michael Ruiz, R-U-I-Z. The title says, "What Tyler Robinson's Defense Wants Hidden and Why Prosecutors and Media Say No in Court." This is Dateline Provo, Utah. Utah prosecutors and a broad coalition of media organizations are pushing back against attempts by alleged Charlie Kirk assassin Tyler Robinson's defense to shield court filings from public view, arguing there's no justification for the secrecy. That is the ones who want things out in the open are arguing that. Prosecutors argue that Robinson's defense has failed to both justify secretive filings and to explain how their public release would violate his right to a fair trial and the assassination of the Turning Point USA founder. They wrote that the remedy for the defense's concerns should be part of jury selection, not secret pretrial filings. And here's a quote from Deputy Utah County Attorney Christopher Ballard. He wrote to the judge last week, quote, "Given defendant's inadequate justification for restricting access to his motion and the existence of these reasonable ways to ensure a fair trial, despite pretrial publicity, defendant has not rebutted the presumption that the public should have access to his motion." goes on. For the media group, which includes Fox News, along with other national and local outlets, the constitutional arguments largely weigh the First Amendment rights of the public as a whole against Robinson's right to a fair trial. Lawyers for the Media Coalition have argued they are being forced to guess what evidence the defense wants excluded because the underlying motion was filed under seal on January 9th. This creates confusion for the public, they warn. According to defense filings, the public's right of access is not absolute, while Robinson's right to a fair trial is. They want that 200-page motion to block news cameras from the classroom classified, arguing that its undisclosed contents could unfairly prejudice the jury pool against their client. And here's a quote, "My take is that the defendant's efforts to keep things under wraps is doomed. As Royal Oaks, a media attorney and legal analyst, who successfully convinced a California judge to televise the O.J. Simpson murder trial in the 1990s. And Mr. Oaks went on, "Not every document, snippet of testimony or fact is automatically open to the public and press simply because it relates to a regional proceeding. But nearly everything is." Unquote. The Supreme Court has found, quote, "Pre-trial publicity, even if pervasive and concentrated, cannot be regarded as leading automatically and in every kind of criminal case to an unfair trial," unquote, according to a filing from the prosecution. Well, there's a great deal more to that. Some of it's technical, so I'm not going to read it all, but it's well worth reading. And I admit I'm no lawyer, nor am I a judge. It seems to me that the more open and available to the public a trial is, the more honest the trial will be. We do not want in this country to get to the point where some totalitarian governments, and even some governments like in Britain at one time, kept everything secret. I think the word is in camera. Not sure I'm using that correctly. If we do not let the public know, how can they have any belief that things have been honest and fair? So I think the more that's open to the public, the better, in my opinion. I rebel in my mind against the very idea that anything would be sealed up. I suppose there are reasons. I can't think of any as a lawyer. If I was a lawyer, maybe I'd think differently. But anyway, another thing, too, is just a layman. I wonder about the justice of these trials that are delayed for endless months. I think they wanted 6 months, some of Robinson's lawyers, to do something. I heard of a radio the other day. How do you need 6 months to prepare? I can't imagine. I would think that a couple weeks should be enough. Well, again, I'm not a lawyer. Don't claim to be. Right, I'm not. But it does seem strange, as I'm sure it does to many of you. Okay, there's a little something by, let me see now, the Gateway Pundit. Anti-police activist heckle Zoran Mamdani outside of mayoral residence. Quote, "We advocated for you, Zoran. You lied. Zoran, shame," unquote. This is a video if you go to their website. Gateway Pundit, February 1st, by Jordan Conradson. "Thankfully for many New Yorkers, he just isn't radical enough. During a recent incident centered around his unfulfilled promises relating to investigating the police, protesters surrounded the gate outside his residence at night and began shouting through a megaphone, 'We was with you, Zoran. We voted for you, Zoran. We advocated for you, Zoran.' He continued, 'You ain't did nothing but get up in there and lie to us. You lied, Zoran. Shame, Zoran,' unquote. The Gateway Pundit previously reported on Mamdani's radical anti-police positions before he was elected mayor in November, including his plan to replace police with social workers in response to certain crimes, which he backtracked on in November. Now he's facing more heat from his liberal base for walking back on his promises to empower and give the final say on police accountability to the Civilian Complaint Review Board, CCRB, an independent agency that investigates police complaints and dishes out recommendations for punishment. A man with a megaphone was filmed outside Zoran's house with other protesters shouting, "The first lie was CCRB, Zoran. CCRB should have the final say." The others present could be heard shouting shame repeatedly. And per the Daily News, I guess that would be the New York Daily News, while still a candidate, Mamdani, said he would, as mayor, empower the board, which investigates and prosecutes the misconduct complaints against the NYPD officers, to get the final say on what sort of disciplinary action should be taken against cops found guilty of wrongdoing. Under the current system, the board offers recommendations to the NYPD commissioner, who then gets to decide what punishment to mete out. Well, looks like a typical politician to me, making promises but not keeping them. In this case, making some promises to the far, far left and going back on them once he gets elected. Oh, where have we heard that before so many times? Many, many, many. Is there a politician alive who hasn't made promises he didn't keep or she didn't keep? Doubt it very much. Once again, we'd love to hear from you. Write to me, Lou Cavalli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, and our zip code is 21609. Tell us if you like the show, hate the show, like part of it, hate part of it. Give us a little money if you can. That's always appreciated. Thank you for listening, and tune in again next week. Good night.